So this bolt of lightning shot across the universe and inspired me with the idea that we have to do a podcast. And that's what I wanted to tell you. We should do a podcast. Okay, bye.
Okay, I hit it.
Should I push the button? It's okay. Going. All right.
All right, so first and foremost, I just have to apologize. Meg's very inconsiderate friends are visiting and chatting in the background, and if that upsets you, just turn this podcast
throw
off.
Throw in the towel right now.
Throw in the towel and just stop listening. Okay, welcome to Feature Creep, colon.
Built-in microwave, semicolon.
Balloonacy.
Balloonacy. We've been waiting so long to do this episode.
Have we? I feel like we've talked. No, I don't think we have. Have we really been waiting this long?
I have always wanted to do an episode about this since we were doing episodes about anything because it's just such a funny topic. But then like I think it was one of those things where I wanted it to be perfect. And so I kept kicking the can down the road into the future and not taking seriously the opportunity to actually just do a podcast about it spontaneously.
Right.
And, I kind of thought maybe there might be a hurdle to doing, a full-length podcast because I wasn't sure how much information we would find or how hard we would have to look. And it turns out not very hard and lots when you just dig around a little bit. And we were inspired because, you were traveling recently. We've had like lots and lots of travel. And this is a mode of travel, although it's not a good one. You were just abroad and now you're back and we haven't had a podcast in a while, so we had a while to think about it. And then something happened recently and we were like, now's the time.
Yes.
So here we are. Yes. Balloonacy.
So I think we should just start with as we often do when we've actually picked out a particular like subject. We should start with, I'm gonna just start with the Wikipedia definition or opening sort of paragraph. I think it reads well. And so this is retrieved from Wikipedia, the article Hot Air Ballooning on January 23rd, 2024. So hot air ballooning is the recreational and competitive adventure sport of flying hot air balloons. Attractive aspects of ballooning include the exceptional quiet, except when the propane burners are firing, which is in parentheses, the lack of a feeling of movement and the bird's eye view. So that's the romantic aspect of ballooning. Like it's
that's the propaganda around hot air ballooning.
I think that some people find it incredibly photogenic to see lots of like a balloon festival and seeing lots of balloons taking off in the, you know, in the early morning.
Yes.
You know, oftentimes they're done at places that have majestic views. And if you Google hot air balloon photography, like there's just
sweeping vistas,
amazing photos of people in hot air balloons.
You know, or a lot of Arizona in there.
A lot of Arizona.
Yeah.
Yep.
I do think it's pretty when they light up at night.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Like, or when it's very, very, very early in the morning. And so the sun hasn't come up yet and you can see them glowing from inside of the balloon.
Yeah.
But that's kind of a trade-off for, much worse things.
Yeah, so we're gonna get to that. I think it's worth pointing out that hot air balloons were probably one of the first manned flights, the first clearly recorded instance, according to the same Wikipedia article, the first recorded instance of a balloon carrying passengers used hot air to generate buoyancy. It was built by the brothers Joseph Michael and Jacques Etienne Montgolfier in Annonay, France. And this was in October 19th of 1783.
So that was a while ago. I mean, that was
a while ago. I mean, it was the, you know, it was the dawn of air flight, right? Like, when was
the Wright brothers didn't,
was 1903.
Yeah, Kitty Hawk until like, it was like 2 years before my grandma was born. That's how I like remember it tagged to something else in history. That's a meaningful date to me.
right. Yeah. So hot air balloons, pretty crazy. modern hot air ballooning was born in 1960, according to this article.
Oh my God.
When Ed Yost launched a balloon with a new nylon envelope and propane burner system of his own invention, which is...
Is nylon flammable or meltable?
Yeah. It's, I mean, it's... nylon is basically a plastic. Nylon probably it's a synthetic polymer thermoplastic. So thermoplastic means let me just pull up the it becomes pliable or moldable at a high temperature and solidifies when cooled.
I have some of that in my kitchen for splints.
Sure. Yeah. And nylon, I mean, it will burn eventually. Like it's a hydrocarbon based, you know, synthetic.
Okay. We're just going to say, but not like super flammable, obviously, or the whole thing would be off.
Yeah. Actually, I can look up. It's, it melts instead of burning. So no, it's not particularly flammable. So it's, but also.
Is that what paracord is made out of?
Yeah, or similar. They use different polymers now, I think, but there was at a time when it was just nylon and I think polypropylene and similar plastics are used depending. Okay.
So like 1960s till now. So it hasn't even been like 100 years of modern ballooning.
Right. And I think. We could just sort of set the tone with it's not even through the first month of 2024 and four people have died already
from hot air ballooning.
I think also, like, you know, before we get too deep into these statistics, something that I have not been able to find for this podcast, which I really wanted to find, was the total number of flights that happen in a given year. Because you see these statistics and the numbers, like, four seems low, right? However, if it was like, how many flights have happened so far this year? Six. It's like, that's a pretty shitty record, right?
Yes.
Like, if you were on one of the six flights at the beginning of the year, you had a high probability of being one of the four dead people.
Yes.
Like, you know.
Terror through statistics.
Yeah, terror through statistics.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. That is a terrible fucking record if we look at it that way.
It's also like it's interesting. So there's a lot of problems we found, I think, with the nature of how unregulated hot air ballooning is.
Yes. It's basically just like,
so it would be interesting for some listeners to know that very recently, they heavily increased the number of hours that required for a pilot test so that you're certified by the FAA. So hot air ballooning is regulated by the FAA. It's a Part 91, I think.
Yes, that is correct, which is like the least regulated.
Yeah. So if I just a short... So basically, the Federal Aviation Administration is a U.S. government and governing body, which is the ones that we're going to be focused on because that's the one we know the most of. I can't speak for other countries. For sure, we're going to talk about accidents that happened in other countries. Part 91 basically is referencing the Code of Federal Regulations. And Part 91 of Title 14, where Part 91 is sort of general operations. So general aviation pilots find information regarding operations of private aircraft in Part 91 of Title 14 of the Code of Federal Regulations. So Part 91 basically outlines all of the rules and regulations that govern general aviation. You know, other parts that govern other parts of aviation, and it's a huge, broad, sweeping scope. And generally, the FAA has very.
This is the you're under your own recognizance.
Yeah, and so it's. I mean, it's
good luck.
Yeah, like it's, you know, the FAA, like the rules and regulations of the Title 14 or the Part 91 in particular, or just all of this, like, are derived from just like, you know, the federal aviation body is just like reviewing accidents and like heavily trying to prevent them and work on creating a more and more safe and equitable flying space, like, area, I guess. I mean, I don't have their exact mission statement, but if you read any of their stuff, like if you look at their governing, like their documents and things, it's like heavily focused on like how procedures are done, like what are the rules of the road, like how flight is to be performed.
Kind of like just like driving school was. It was a lot of like memorizing things and like knowing how to move around other things that are moving or things that are not moving and when you should move a certain way. And then like you have to pass a written exam that's all about the sort of like academic aspects of being a pilot. And then you have to like do a flight test and like pass that too if you're going to be like a pilot.
Yeah.
Like an airplane, but like
speaking of becoming a pilot, so they recently heavily increased the number of hours. They went from
to become
a balloon pilot.
Yeah,
I believe they increased it all the way up to 20 hours.
That's incredible.
20 hours of experience before they can be licensed.
Who's got the time?
Right. Just to
you
put
might as
this,
well become a doctor.
To put this in context, in California, to drive, to get a driver's license under the age of 18, I don't remember what the over 18 is, but under the age of 18, in order to get a driver's license, you have to have 50 hours on your learner's permit of basically supervised driving.
Yeah, that's way more reasonable.
Yeah. Just
way more reasonable.
You know.
Than 20 fucking hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, especially considering that with a car, you are stuck on one axis.
Well,
like,
just to play devil's advocate, one could argue how many hours, like, there's only two operations in a balloon, up or down. So,
yeah.
One could argue,
I guess you're right,
that more hours doesn't matter. I'm being a dick. No, it turns out that, flying a hot air balloon is very nuanced, and you have very little control. You can go up or you can go down, and sometimes you can't go up and you can only go down, and that's definitely the focus of this podcast.
well said. Where should we start?
I feel like we could just take a walk down the I think I posted the list. There's a Wikipedia list of ballooning accidents. It is not by any means
exhaustive.
It's just a good place to give a good overview. And where I also, where I think we'll start to get the flavor of the kinds of calamities that can affect one when ballooning.
Our tale begins in June of 1785.
Yes.
There was a crash that killed Jean-François Pilat de Rosier.
Yes.
And he was trying to cross the English Channel, and his hydrogen hot air balloon. Which was not the usual type of balloon, which is called a Montgolfier plain hot air balloon. They had some complications and there were no survivors, and it was considered one of the very first fatal aviation accidents ever, possibly the first in recorded history because it was so long ago, 1785. And prior to that, you know, people just never made it up into the air for very long. Nobody was dying before that of aviation accidents.
We did discuss a little bit before the podcast. I had some concerns about the nature of laughing wholeheartedly at the calamity that befalls these people. Like, you know, it's probably okay to be laughing at someone who died in 1785, I suppose.
Time like, heals all wounds.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, is it too soon? I definitely can't stress enough that personally my feelings are that all death is bad and it sucks, and there's definitely sadness there. However,
it can also be funny.
It can also be funny. And
hilarious
also,
sometimes in retrospect.
Yes. You also pointed out that generally hot air ballooning has never been a compulsory form of travel in the case that like one ever right. needs it for a form of survival or to exist in a functional way in this world. So yeah. it is a little bit...
I feel like if you're going to... Like you're assuming... Like you have informed consent or whatever, like yeah. somebody's getting on a hot air balloon,
right.
like is making that choice willingly. Like they're not being coerced or like, you know, if you, like I said, if you have to get around to like go to a job and make money for yeah. food and eat and rent and all things,
yeah.
then you're going to have to engage in some form of travel, probably outside of your home, maybe that you don't like necessarily want to do because it puts you at risk, but there's no other way to get shit done. And so you're like in cars, for example, just
right.
sometimes you just got to get in the car, at least in America, because that's how America
yeah, it's really difficult not to. Works. I mean, yeah, it puts you at a huge disadvantage to be someone who doesn't drive
yeah
so or like, doesn't ride in cars even
yeah so there's a good chance that
and not impossible but yeah sorry
yeah, yeah yeah there's a good chance I could die in a car accident, but also like, you know, that would really suck and it's kind of tragic because a yeah. lot of people would rather not even be driving anyway, and it's just sort of this thing we have to do to like survive
yeah.
here, which is perverse and crazy. But like the thing with hot air balloons is I don't think anyone ever really has to take a hot right. air balloon ride.
Right.
And so like if you die in a hot air balloon crash, I mean, I just wonder what you even were thinking getting in that thing in the first place.
That's fair. Yeah. That actually, this reminds me, I was going to suggest that if you're listening to this and you have a different opinion, we would like to hear it. And the way that you can tell us that opinion is you can send us an email. So Meg here and Ned here, we have email addresses listed on the website, fcbm.io. So you can email either of us directly. However, more easy to remember, I think, is you can just email the CEO and founder of this very podcast, Dana, and that's Dana at fcbm.io. And if you send an email to that address, Dana will get it. And then she will forward it on to either of us or, you know, try to address it if you have concerns yeah. or thoughts or opinions, or you just want to share in your own experiences. And like, I can't stress enough that like, no matter how a loved one dies, like it is tragic. Like it's heartbreaking for the people who care about that person. And I'm generally personally a person who generally cares about all living beings at some level, but also when they make these decisions to say like get in a very small carbon fiber tube and then shove themselves down to the bottom of the ocean because they're so rich they think they can do anything, yeah. I find there's a certain amount of humor in that situation.
Yes, yes.
And considering,
I think yeah. in that situation, I think it's hilarious that their death toll from the Titanic like clicked up yes, after so many years. Who saw that coming?
I know.
I never would have guessed
just the
that.
Irony of the hubris and the just the everything about it. Yeah.
The Titanic claims another
also victims. Like I'm sure someone else has said this, but it's just dawning on me like the way the Titanic was like touted as having like I don't remember how many hulls it has or whatever, but it was like
yeah.
an unsinkable ship, and kind of the way fucking Ocean Gate, I still can't get over that name, the way Ocean Gate unfolded was just like reading about what's his fuck the CEO and like all of his claims about how like impossibly great this submarine was that they'd built and how
yes.
foolproof it was, definitely yes. definitely unsinkable or Stocked just the right rush. Amount of sinkable, uncrushable or whatever the fucking yeah, nonsense yeah. was yeah
because coiled spoiled whatever nanotube
yes
carbon nanotubes in a wool around the thing.
Yes. But
anyway, yeah. I think some of the same like weird. So there's probably all kinds of reasons people get into hot air balloons, right?
Right.
Like,
sure.
Like you said, people love the view, and it's like seems really peaceful. And it's very quiet up there, and like
yeah.
whatever. If the wind is blowing, that's what's moving you around. But it's not like it's not gonna blow you around super hard, hopefully, unless in case in these cases well, it kind of did.
This is the problem, right? Like the problem is that you have so little control. Your navigation is go up to find different air direct, like wind blowing in a different direction, or go down to find wind blowing in a different direction. But you're still limited in altitude in both directions, because if you're flying through mountains, you can only go so low. And if you're flying, you know, and you can only go so high. You can't,
or you run out of oxygen.
Yeah. Not only do you run out of oxygen, but like you can't, I think you can't heat the air hot enough to make it less dense than the surrounding air. To the point where it functioned, like you can get up there, like it's kind of caps out.
Yeah, so that's the whole, that's the physics behind the balloon, right? You heat the air inside of the big inflaty part.
The envelope, I think, is how they refer to it in the FAA documentation.
Yes. Yep. So you, the balloony part of the balloon is the envelope that you heat with like super polluting, gas burning thing that like heats up the air inside of the balloon, and then that expands, and then because it's less dense than the air around it, it like rises through the air column just like a bubble rises through water, and it goes up, and then when it cools off it starts to come back down again, so you have to like fire it back up, and then you're up and then down again. But like you said, it's only up or only down, and whether you're moving left or right or east or west or whatever direction you want to move, like that is subject to the whims of airflow. Mm-hmm. Because this is all about like fluid dynamics and where the air is flowing. So you're kind of like, if you're around other people, you're probably going to be going with the same flow they're going, unless something happens and the currents change and then you smash into each other.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
And your Bernie thing sets their thingy thing on fire, whatever, their envelope on fire. Anyway, we decided that's not going to happen because they melt, but then you also fall down.
Yeah. It's well, I think we should skim through and not, we're definitely not going to read every single one of these.
Yeah. So I like the next one in the list, 1819. Oh, so that was like 15, this is like 30 some years later, right? So it was all was quiet in the world of balloonacy.
Uh-huh.
Until July of 1819. And then a woman named Sophie Blanchard was in Paris and tried to light a firework. And then it like hit the balloon, and the balloon started burning and came crashing down like 300 meters.
So nuts.
Into Paris. So just like over a densely populated city.
Yeah.
1851, another like 30 years later, basically, like a man in Copenhagen, Denmark took off from Christiansborg Palace, and then the balloon, after launching, landed in some water, killing balloonist Joseph Tardini, who had performed dozens of flights in the past, and his 11-year-old son and another woman survived. And it was perhaps the first ballooning death in Scandinavia. Yes.
Milestones.
The same balloon, weirdly, was used again in 1852 and launched successfully in front of an audience of 40,000 people. So I guess people were really impressed by balloons.
Yes. Yeah.
1853, Louis Deschamps was killed during his 120th flight. So apparently it was possible to do better than 1%.
Yes. Right.
Yeah. We know this because of this guy in France in 1853. 1897, Norway. Indirect deaths. All three balloon expedition members died of exposure months after their hydrogen balloon crashed. I wonder if they ate each other.
Who knows? We may
we'll
never
have to
know.
Look into that one.
Yeah.
1905. Someone was accidentally killed in a premature dynamite/balloon stunt explosion at a county fair. 1908, Franco-British exhibition balloon crash, London, England. The balloon owned by American balloonist Captain Lovelace
exploded.
Killing his 18-year-old secretary and a male employee. Six others were injured, including a 47-year-old employee died days later. So they suffered. That's cheerful.
Yeah.
Let's see, 1910. This is interesting.
Yeah.
the Orkney balloon crash in Orkney, Scotland. They were caught by the wind. See, this is our whole argument against ballooning. They were caught by the wind and blown northwest across the North Sea. The balloon briefly landed in the water where one of the passengers fell out into the ocean. And as a result, the balloon became lighter and took off again. Leaving someone to drown in the middle of the North Sea all alone. While the other people floated away uncontrollably and drifted all night long. Their first sight of land was the next day when they crash landed next to Park Cottage, Kirkwall, Orkney, Scotland. The balloon demolished a stone wall, and then the occupants were all the rest of them uninjured. They were looked after and stayed in Orkney for several days before catching the passenger ferry to Aberdeen and then back to Munich. Although not acknowledged, this was the first crossing of the North Atlantic North Sea by air.
Yeah, but it doesn't count, right? Because they touched down halfway.
I know. That's what I would be inclined to say, too. I'd be like, technically...
You can't just let someone off in the middle. Like, just let someone off and keep going and call it a continuous flight. Someone disembarked. So
can you imagine? Oh, my God.
It's nightmarish. It's like... Oh. Can you imagine just being like, you know, you're just so excited. You're like going to go on this crazy flying contraption. You're promised all these amazing views and this peaceful flight. Yes. And the next thing you know, you're drowning in the middle of the North Sea.
Fuck. While everyone sails away from you.
Yeah. While they just impossibly take off with nothing. Like they can't even throw you a lifeline or anything.
God. The next one is kind of amusing just because
it's its own kind of balloonacy.
Yes. It's its own kind of balloonacy and it's vivid, vivid imagery. So 3 November 1944.
Yeah.
Again, another 30 years. There's like 30 years in between these ballooning accidents.
Yeah.
The Fugo balloon bombs, they were released by Japanese fighters in World War II, basically. Japan released 9,000 fire balloons towards North America. Only 10% of the balloons reached America and killed 6 people.
It's kind of nuts. I mean, that's actually pretty good considering you were like, I'm just going to put these bombs on a balloon and then just launch it in the air.
Hope for the best.
And they got them over the continent and killed some people.
I mean, it's terrible, I think that this is just further evidence that balloons are super dangerous.
Super dangerous.
Right?
Yes.
So 1968, Danube Tower balloon crash, Vienna, Austria. Gas balloon struck the Danube Tower, causing the basket to plummet to the ground, killing American balloonist Francis Shields. I love that, like, balloonist is a title.
Yes, yes.
And some other folks. The film Days of Fury apparently featured footage of the incident, which is crazy.
Wow.
And then let's see, the Free Life balloon was attempting to cross the Atlantic Ocean in 1970 September when it was forced to ditch into the North Atlantic, but I guess nobody died in that.
No, three people died according to the column on the right.
Oh, I see that. Oh, yeah. Shit. I didn't notice that right away.
It goes deads and injureds.
Yeah, there aren't any of these deaths, where people didn't die.
Yeah.
Every one of these accidents has had a death. Yeah. So there's a bunch then, because I think this is when people started doing ballooning as like a recreational thing.
Yeah.
So like 1976, Charlotte, North Carolina, 3 people. 78, Fishers, Indiana, 3 people. 79, Albuquerque, 2 people.
Yep.
79, Davy balloon crash in Davy, Florida, 4 people. And so now it's like it's just one after another, so I'm not going
to
read them all.
Yeah, they definitely catch fire according to that 1979 one in Albuquerque. Wind shear crushed the balloon envelope,
and
the envelope caught fire as they attempted to fly over Sandia Crest.
Yeah, so if you squeeze all of the air out of the balloon, then there's nothing making it lighter than the surrounding air anymore, and it's like it just falls out of the sky and starts on fire.
This is also the one right after that. The balloon collided with power lines, causing propane tanks to explode. Yes. 4 people died in Florida from that in 1979.
That's wild. The balloons hitting power lines is like a major problem.
Yes. Yeah. Like in 93, balloon struck power transmission lines, causing basket to fall more than 100 feet. 6 people died.
1990, south power line south of Bernalillo.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, that was in a shockumentary series banned from television.
In 1999, crashed after hitting a power line. Four people died. In 2001, exploded after hitting a power line. Six people died.
This one's crazy. Albuquerque balloon crash, 9 October 1993. Sunrunner pilot Alan Jones and passenger Carl Gordon died when a balloon hit power lines north of Alameda, severing the gondola from its envelope.
Yes. I just... So entangled in power lines in 2012, resulting in fire. 11 people died.
God. This is crazy. 1994, Osterbirken balloon crash in Germany. Balloon caught fire while attempting to land. 45-year-old man jumped from a height of 8 meters and was injured. 27-year-old woman jumped from a height of 25 meters and was killed. 50-year-old balloonist on fire fell to his death from a height of 80 meters. And the woman's partner, a 29-year-old man, remained in the basket and died in the fire. Just strong winds forced a balloon to ditch. Gas burst into flames. Balloon struck building. So many things. So many. Like, there are so many of them in the recent past. Like, since the 1970s, there's some, like, every year, basically, it's happening.
Yeah.
So the one that we just had, four people died and one was injured after the hot air balloon they were riding and experienced an as of yet unidentified issue with its envelope. Eight skydivers had previously exited the gondola and were unharmed. So people were like going up in the balloon and then like jumping and skydiving out of the balloon. And there were like 12 of them. Because four people died and one was injured. So 13. So there were like eight people. There were like, this was like a sardine can of people tied to this balloon. They were crammed in there. It was like, so the pilot and four people and eight people had jumped out. God. That's too many people for your balloon, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well.
So there's, there's just so many of them. There's just so many ballooning accidents. Balloonacy.
Balloonacy indeed. Yes. It's it is really kind of fucked up. There's also like, so we were mentioning earlier the FAA doesn't like heavily regulate hot air balloons.
Right. They're like, you know what? If you haven't figured it out after 20 hours, it probably doesn't matter anyway. Go for it.
They have in recent years, they changed some laws that people were complaining about. I saw some articles. One of the laws that was changed, or one of the regulations that was changed, is that commercial pilots, aka pilots who can charge passengers to ride in their balloons, have to have a medical certification the same way other commercial pilots have to have. And they were like, well, this is prohibitive. And it's like, motherfucker, like
you're putting other people's lives in your hands.
Yeah. Yeah, like that's you need to be able to do these things.
Yeah.
I honestly think that the fact that if they're a commercial pilot of a hot air balloon, the fact that it doesn't have the same stringent requirements as any other commercial air pilot is kind of seems
bullshit.
Because most of that shit is like not about how you operate your vehicle. I mean, not that there's there's not a heavy amount of that as well.
Yeah.
It's just that like all the shit that's like common across ground, which is like you're trapped in the air in this small vehicle, your passengers are completely beholden upon you to have the skills to navigate and operate this vehicle.
Right.
There's no difference there. The fact that you're flying a hot air balloon, like, why? Because there's only like two choices, up or down, in a hot air balloon versus like, you know, flying another airline, like the airplane that has or another air vehicle that doesn't, to me, doesn't seem to have much. I mean, maybe I'm ignorant here. I'm ignorant here, but like, I don't see why they don't have exactly the same regulations otherwise.
Well, yeah. I mean, like if you were looking at it from like the angle of what you should ethically do, it's like, if you're going to put people's life, so like, not only are you putting people's lives in your hands, you're like responsible for all those lives, because it's likely that you're not in there with another pilot who's just taking a ride with you.
Right.
And so like, man, it almost feels like cheating to call it a pilot.
I mean, it's the operator. Pilot's fine. I'm fine with this.
The like, burner operator?
They're like, yeah, they're, I mean, I like when I, so when I sail, it like typically there's the helmsman or the, typically we kind of, you know, whoever's skippering the boat, right? Like the, there's an order of command that is important.
What was I doing when like we were doing tight circles around the sea lion?
Oh, were you running the jib?
I think so.
Were you?
What does that make me? What's my job title? I need to know how I'm getting paid.
Well, you, if it was you and your friend and I, then you were first mate. Like you were
great.
Yeah,
I've been a first mate before. Can I put this on my resume?
Absolutely, 100%.
Oh my god. Yep. I bet this will get me into ballooning pilot school.
100%. Yeah.
So yeah. So
but you my have, point, like pilot or whatever. But the important thing is like you should have a chain of command that is like understood because you need to be able to operate as a unit quickly. Hopefully the people that you put in the positions are knowledgeable about the requirements of that position so that they can carry out the duties.
Yes.
You know, those are all important things. But like once you're in it, you don't want to fuck with it because chaos isn't going to help you in any of these situations.
Yeah.
You try to, you know, one person's calling the shots and they make decisions and then everybody tries to, you know, follow suit so that
it certainly seems like chaos is just sort of built into this whole process.
It's very much, I mean, it's very much roll the dice, right? You kind of look at the weather and you're like, and I think, I mean, sailing has a certain aspect of that, except that even in sailing, we have a lot of control over the vessel and procedures to accommodate for a wide range of situations.
Yeah.
A hot air balloon has really very little you can do to compensate for a rapidly changing situation.
Yeah, you just have up and down.
Right. Like, it's, you can't, if there's a freak squall and suddenly you've got gale force winds blowing through the region, like, you're going where they're blowing.
Ha ha! That's a very funny, we should put that on bumper sticker and sell it to people who do hot air balloons. Yes. I'm going to write that down.
You're going where you're blowing.
You're going where they're blowing. So, yeah, it's just not like... Okay, so the distance in terms of like the amount of control between people who are completely passive passengers with no authority or control over the situation whatsoever to the pilot in this basket with those same riders... Like the distance between their ability to manage the situation in the basket of this balloon is like not far. Like from expert to completely powerless novice is only 20 hours.
Right.
So like,
right.
In other words, this person, like if they just recently got their pilot's license, they are also a novice.
Right.
Oh my god.
So I found this interesting article and I will pop it back in the chat so you can look at it and then we will reference it on the podcast. But I like this article's opening statement, which is that, or the title of this article, which is, it's called Fatal Balloon Accident Highlights Disagreement Between Safety Agencies. It was written August 4th in 2016 by the author Bart Elias. And I'm assuming that Bart is a he, but really irrelevant. We'll just go with last name. Elias says that, writes that on July 30th, 2016, a hot air balloon tour crashed about 30 miles south of Austin, Texas, killing the pilot and all 15 passengers on board.
So that's 16 people on board. That's wild.
Yeah. According to the list... This was the this was caused by the contact with power lines before crashing, killing all 16 people on board. Yes. I believe that this is the 2016 Lockhart hot air balloon crash. Elias goes on to write that it was the deadliest balloon crash in U.S. history and exposed a disagreement among U.S. safety agencies. The National Transportation Safety Board, NTSB, has urged tougher federal regulation on balloon flights, but the Federal Aviation Administration, FAA, has rejected the NTSB's recommendation.
They rebuffed. They rebuffed them.
I said no thank you.
Exactly.
So... Elias goes on to write that while balloon crashes are uncommon, accidents involving balloon tours can involve large numbers of passengers. A 2013 crash in Egypt killed 19 of the 21 persons on board. A 2012 crash in New Zealand killed all 11 occupants. And a 1989 crash in Australia resulted in 13 deaths, as exampled or referenced. Yeah. The reason I think this is kind of funny is, like, it does raise that issue of, like, there's a lot of times stuff gets reported based on fatality, right? Where's that? Mm-hmm. I don't know if you have a chance while I'm talking. Maybe you can find that other article that talks more about, like, fatalities versus, like, injuries and things like that.
Oh, the one that you shared yesterday?
Yes. Yeah.
That was, like, the PubMed?
Yeah.
Yes, let me look for it here.
So, according to the New York Times, a 2023 article, the Federal Aviation Administration reported that there were 4,955 commercial hot air balloon pilots and 2,051 private pilots with balloon class ratings. So, I just kind of like... It's not like it's not a huge number of people, right?
Right.
It's not like the number of people driving cars.
Oh God, and I bet everybody knows everybody.
I mean, they must, right? Like, there's not balloons themselves, the cost of hot air balloons, to get a new one.
They're not cheap.
No, they're not cheap. They can cost anywhere from $20,000 to $150,000.
Yeah, they're like really fancy cars.
Yeah, yeah.
So I found the National Library of Medicine and the National Center for Biotechnology Information from the National Institutes of Health has an article called Hot Air Balloon Tours, Crash Epidemiology in the United States from 2000 to 2011.
Right.
So if you want me to read anything from that, let me know. Or I don't want to interrupt you. I just wanted you to know that I had found it.
I just want to make sure I have that on hand because I think
it references.
Elias goes on to point out that while commercial balloon companies are not certified or authorized by the FAA, at least in 2016, I'm not sure that that's changed much. They're not required to obtain FAA medical. Okay, yeah. So commercial balloon pilots, during this article in 2016, were not required to obtain FAA medical certification. They are now.
Aha.
So balloon pilots are required to notify FAA in writing within 60 days of any drug and alcohol related driving offenses. They're kind of held a little bit more accountable, I guess. But the FAA has limited capability to monitor compliance with reporting requirements, right? Like, they don't have any way to enforce this, right? Like, there's, you know, if you get a DUI or like you just got really drunk and fucking killed somebody and then, like, you know, first of all, go get on a balloon flight and within the 60 days you haven't even broken the law yet. But then after those 60 days you decide you don't want to report it because, you know, you managed to, like, you know, it's in a small town somewhere and you're just going to go on the idea that they're not going to report it because why? And so then nobody knows. Elias went on to say that FAA responded to the NTSB safety recommendations, and in its opinion, such action was unnecessary because doing so would not result in a significantly higher level of operational safety, which I think in and of itself is a little bit funny and kind of damning, right? It's like, now this is a shit show. Like, what's the point?
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing we're going to do that's going to, you know, significantly increase the safety of what is already inherently kind of a fucked up activity.
Yeah, like he says, Elias says that too. He's like, ballooning has inherent risks.
Yeah.
balloons are slower and less maneuverable and consequently vulnerable to deteriorating weather conditions and obstacles, and they operate from and to non-dedicated departure and landing sites, and they lack specific safety features to protect anyone inside, and obstacles like power lines and antennas are like everywhere all the time. So it's just kind of like it's like, I don't know, if you get into like the water when there's a bunch of great white sharks eating seals and you have like flippers on, don't be surprised if a shark bites you, I guess.
So I think this is like kind of the crux of our argument, right?
Yeah.
So right here, according to the article that Elias wrote, the FAA concluded, since the amount of ballooning is so low, the FAA believes the risk posed to all pilots and participants is also low, given that ballooners understand the risks and general hazards associated with this activity. And this right here is the whole fucking problem with the Ocean Gate gate and all the other nonsense. The problem isn't the pilot. I mean, the pilots are always the problem, 100%. They never get off the hook. But the problem isn't the problem. The problem is how they're handling the problem, which is to say that if you are someone who's like, you know, goes to a balloon festival, looks beautiful, you see all the balloons, and next year you go again and someone's like, hey, would you like to book a flight on our balloon? You don't fucking know all the inherent risks and insanity that goes along with that.
Yeah, you can't, like, they're probably not informing people of the risks.
It's already disclosed, you know, it's already understood that there's no regulation that enforces the idea that you have to disclose in a certain way the inherent risks. I'm sure that they have some insane release form where a pilot gets to say, here, sign this. So if you fall out of the basket, and then you're like, you fall out of the basket? He's like, no one's ever fallen out of my basket this year. And so
this year, not today.
Yeah. This whole festival, no one's died yet. Well, we haven't gone up yet, but no one's died.
No one's died. So like,
only four people have died in this year.
Right.
Of all of 2024, only four people died from hot air ballooning in the U.S.
But don't worry, the craft survives. We'll take it up again.
It's fine. Yes.
So like, hey, you've never been on a hot air balloon. I've never been on a hot air balloon ride.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody who's taken one, I don't think. No. If you can hear this and you've been on one, I'm interested as to like whether you got the impression that the person who was taking you on the ride had any fucking clue what they were doing.
So I feel like I have this vague memory that at least for a while at the San Diego Wild Animal Park, which I think it's called now Safari Park or Safari Adventure or something. I think that they had for a while, they had a tethered hot air balloon that you could go up in.
So just up and down.
Yeah, like it was tethered, and so
like
it
an
was
elevator.
Kind of like an elevator, but anyway, that's the closest I've ever been. I feel like when I was younger, when I was a kid, somebody I knew, like we went and were around people either landing or taking off or something. But I never rode in a hot air balloon. I didn't really have a huge desire.
It's interesting that they had one tethered, because when I was in the position to talk to a bunch of hot air balloon pilots about some stuff that I had to research, unfortunately, one of them made the argument to me that a tether was much more dangerous than a free flight, because a free flight, you at least can move up and down and move around. But with a tether, you run the risk of a large wind coming and just smashing you sideways into the ground, instead of blowing you to one direction or the other. You swing in an arc right into the ground. And I thought, oh, well, that's interesting. Because, you know, you would think like, oh, you're not going to go anywhere. It's tied down, right?
But like,
if a really high gust of wind comes, it's just going to like smash you.
Right.
So, right. It's like, oh my God. Like, so here's the thing, like, and this is kind of what you've been saying, there's nothing you can do to make this any safer. This is just really fucking dangerous. Like, going in a hot air balloon in any condition, like both the balloon and exterior, like this, the weather, whatever the conditions are of the craft and the weather, it kind of doesn't fucking matter, because it's such a wild card. And also, even if everything goes according to plan and correctly and right, and you're like floating around and going up and down and up and down, you can still smash into a power line or something.
Yeah, well, there was I can't find the article now, but I read so much material yesterday because I was so excited about this.
Yes.
I was reading about one of the more common things that happens is like the rough landing. So,
oh yeah.
So the other thing about riding in a hot air balloon that's probably not reported at all is that you may, if you take enough flights, you're going to have some rough landings, and like they can injure you, right?
Because yeah.
you can come down way too fast
and smash your legs and pulverize your bones.
Yeah, and not die, and therefore maybe not even report it.
Right, because it wasn't a fatality, so...
Yeah. Yeah, I was looking through... I feel like I was looking through the training material and it talked about that.
Okay, yeah.
Because yeah, it can be, like, your rate of descent... Like, you have to understand, too, like, a hot air balloon does not... It's not responsive the way, like, an airplane is, where when you move the rudder, you're directly yeah. influencing the direction of the plane, or the, you know, you're influencing airflow and... Like
right.
when you fire steer. That burner, like even like it's a balance, right? Because you can only, I think I read in the FAA regulations that certified balloons, and they have to be certified to be flight mm-hmm. worthy, have to demonstrate a certain rate of ascent.
Okay.
And I don't remember what that is, but that basically means that it's like, you know, firing full blast or whatever, the balloon mm-hmm. needs to be able to demonstrate that it can move up at a certain rate. It doesn't yeah. say how quickly it has to reach that rate of ascent.
Ah.
And so my point being is, like, if you're coming down too fast, it may be too late. There's nothing you can do. You can't mm-hmm. fire it. Like, you may be firing the burner the whole time and you're scrubbing off your descent rate a little bit, but
yeah,
you imagine
like you're coming down at 10, but you're only adding a one in the opposite direction. Yeah,
like maybe you reduce it to like 9 meters a second or something, as opposed to 10. Like it's, you know, every little bit helps when you're talking about physics and the kinetics of, in the, you know, potential energy that you're trying to scrub off and crashing, mm-hmm. you know, crashing into the ground, etc. But my point is that it just seems. It's funny to me because it's like, on the one hand, like there's lots of dangerous shit that people like to do, and like
yeah.
you know, rock climbing and fucking race cars and all kinds of shit. I think inherently my problem isn't, I find it kind of like, the part that bothers me is the commercialization of it, where it's like there's passengers, right, which
yes.
require no training,
right?
Like you're just not.
You're just passively taken for a ride by people who may or may not know what they're doing, and that may or may not even help regardless.
Right.
Like in the fatal balloon accident highlights disagreement article, it says like, while ballooning crashes are uncommon, and that's only so like when you say uncommon, it's like, why? Because there's only a couple hundred of them a year. Like,
right.
If you're saying balloon crashes are uncommon because only a few balloon flights, relatively speaking, take place every year, that's different from saying like ballooning doesn't take place very often, but 90% of the time when it does happen, there's a problem.
Yeah.
There's a difference there. The crashes may be uncommon because ballooning may be uncommon, but how many crashes are there relative to flights is the question.
Right.
Like, that's the number you care about.
Yeah.
So it says here that a study of risks to balloon occupants examined both fatal and non-fatal crashes in the United States between 2000 and 2011, and it found that half the accidents occurred on paid hot air balloon tours.
Yeah.
So, like, it's not like, ballooning is inherently dangerous unless you're a pilot, and then you're trained so you know how to deal with it, and it becomes safer because you have some control over your behavior and you can mitigate risks through behavior. It's like, no, it's just fucking dangerous all the fucking time. And half the time that somebody dies in an accident, it's at the hands of another person who's supposed to know what they're doing.
Right.
So like, it's not just like people stealing their mom's balloon and crashing it.
Right.
It's not the teenagers. It's like, even professionals are crashing this shit half the time anyone's crashing it.
Yeah.
which is fucking crazy. So like, it's, you know, it says that unlike airplane and helicopter commercial air tours, paid balloon rides are not regulated under FAA National Air Tour Safety Standards. And so like, there's no compliance with standards. There's just not, it's just like whoever wants to do whatever they want to do, they just do it. And the this other article from the National Institutes of Health said the incidence of morbidity and mortality is high among hot air balloon tour crashes. All of this is like a tongue twister, balloonacy.
Yes, and
the proportion of balloon crashes attributed to paid riders appears to have increased over time. So it's getting worse.
Yes.
More and more people are paying for rides and more of them are dying because the safety record of balloon flights isn't improving with the increase in flights.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah.
So this health article said that they considered they did some analysis and they considered a fatality occurring within 30 days of a crash to be classified as a death related to the crash. So an injury that requires hospitalization for at least 48 hours with a bony fracture is considered like a serious injury. Damage to internal organs, hemorrhaging, producing second or third degree burns, damage to muscle, tendon, or nerve is a serious injury. Minor injury includes bruises, strains, sprains, and simple fractures of fingers or toes or the nose. So substantial damage to an aircraft is defined as damage or failure reporting or requiring major component repair or replacement under normal circumstances. So like they counted up the number of hot air balloon crashes from 2000 to 2011.
Right.
And they came up with 169 crashes in that 12-year period. And of that 169, 78 or 46% occurred during a tour. And the tours involved 519 occupants in total, of which 94 suffered minor injuries, 91 sustained serious injuries, and 5 died. So of the 78 hot air balloon tour crashes, 65 of them, or 83%, resulted in at least one serious or fatal injury. That is not a good statistic.
No.
That means you're basically fucked if you get into a hot air balloon. Like...
It's also like it suggests a lot about like the survivability rate of if there's an incident.
Yeah, if there's an incident, great. You might probably die.
Like if nothing goes wrong, fine. Great. You're not going to get injured. If something goes wrong, you're probably going to statistically you're probably going to die.
You're going to die. So yeah, it's kind of like an all or nothing thing when you get in that balloon.
Yeah.
They have like a whole table of paid hot air balloon ride occupant injury severity in relation to type of collision, United States 2000 to 2011. And it's just like, they have the collision list on the left margin and it says tree, ground, multiple, power line, balloon, as in another balloon, building, fence, tower, no collision. And how many fatalities there were for each of these things. So a total of 20% of the time people ran into trees. 13% of the time they ran into the ground. So that's what you were talking about with the hard landing. Like you just smash into the ground coming down too fast. There were 7.7% of these flights that resulted in injuries or deaths were multiple objects. So you crash into one thing, bounce off of it, crash into another thing, and then like finally hit the ground. 7% of the time people hit power lines.
God.
Ah! That's insane.
Yeah.
So the pilot error contributed to 81% of crashes and was at least a partial contributor to all fatalities. And pilots erred by descending at an excessive rate or failing to maintain clearance of obstacles in most of the incidents where there was an injury or a death. So, like, it's just pilots not knowing how to land the fucking thing that usually results in a problem. There were two pilots who erred by not issuing protective helmets to balloon occupants. Are all of the occupants of the balloon supposed to wear helmets?
I don't know. This just seems...
Wow.
Yeah.
That was the first mention I saw of that. So, yeah, just like hard landings are the most common thing. Object collisions, the balloon being dragged is often a problem. Their landing bounces are a problem. Gondola rollover where the basket just tips over.
Yes. Yeah.
Occupant ejection. And then fire is the least common risk factor. So, yeah, I guess it's interesting that most of when I look at a map, they have like dots for where the crashes occurred. And they're mostly in Arizona and New Mexico. Like there's a large, large concentration of balloon crashes in those two states. Oh, and Colorado, too.
Yeah. Well, New Mexico has a really huge balloon festival, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm guessing that's a they have a large concentration of balloonacy.
Yeah. Fucking crazy.
Should we
don't get in a hot air balloon? That's what our message is today. Don't do it. It's too dangerous. And we're high risk people, and we're telling you not to get in one of those.
Yes.
Oh my God. Oh, balloonacy. So yeah, it's just every time you hear about a ballooning accident, it's always like something horrific. Like, oh, the balloon was coming down too fast and then it crashed into a power line and then it caught fire and then everybody dumped out of the basket onto the street and two people died. Yeah. Like they're all just horrific, insane stories of like, what happened now? But like my favorite one by far is the one where the balloon smashed into the North Sea, dumped somebody out, and then took off again without them. Yes, like it's just like so fucking random and out of control. Like let that be a lesson. This could be you. You think you're going for a scenic flight, and the next thing you know, you're being left to die with the sharks.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Oh my God. Don't do it. Don't get in the balloon. So that's balloonacy. That's why we call it balloonacy.
Indeed. Do we have colors of the day?
Oh, let's look.
Bring this up because I probably have to be boring and go.
So we do have colors of the day. Yeah. And the first one is endothermic confinement, which is kind of funny because that's sort of like... thermic confinement is what happens inside of a balloon.
Right.
That's not totally off topic.
No.
So that one is kind of like a lovely rust color.
Yeah.
Like the Big Lebowski says, rust colorations.
Yes.
Its RGB values are 160, 78, 10. So the first red value is 160, the green value is 78, and the blue value is 10. So it's a very warm color. Like there's very little cool undertone to it whatsoever.
Yep.
Mostly red. It's beautiful. I love it. It's like a food color.
Yes.
It's definitely a foodie color. It's making me want to eat something.
Like a chocolatey rice cake.
Yeah. I have to crack into the other half of the bag.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I had three of them before we recorded this, which is why this is coming up again. Because I just kept eating them and eating them and eating them.
Just chomping.
They're so delicious because the ratio of like the rice to the chocolatey frosting covering is like the perfect ratio. I don't know how else to describe it. It's just fantastic. And the crunch. Oh, so good. The other color.
Yes.
Is agonistic dopamine, which is like hilarious.
Yes.
Because like when you talk about neurotransmitters like dopamine, you talk about agonists and antagonists. Anyway, the RGB value is 84, 147, 231. So this one's kind of like, well, I was going to say it's kind of like the opposite of the other one, but it's not all because the numbers are way too far off. So the red value is 84, the blue green value is 147, and the blue value is 231. It's like a powder blue.
Yeah, it is kind of a powder blue. Yeah. You can also chuck these two. We're going to read the hexadecimal values off real quick.
Yeehaw.
And you can chuck these into Google, and if you put one in, it'll show you the color. So you can see it specifically if you have your phone with you right now or if you're sitting at a computer.
Put your peepers on it.
Yeah. So the endothermic confinement, the hexadecimal value will be hashtag A04E0A. So again, that's alpha 04 echo 0 alpha. Ooh. The hexadecimal value for agonistic dopamine is hashtag 5493 echo 7. That's 5493 echo 7. So if you put in a pound sign and then put in those numbers, you can look at them directly and see exactly what we're talking about.
It's very cool.
Very cool indeed.
Share an experience.
Share an experience. Good job, everybody. We talked
Great
about
job,
balloonacy.
Everybody. Yeah. We survived balloonacy and maybe we saved. You know what? I think we saved some lives today.
I think we did save some lives today. Yeah. Going
I'm
going to
take credit for that.
Right. Someone, I like the thing that I imagine is that somebody got proposed to and their insane future husband is like wants to buy them a balloon flight, a romantic balloon flight. And they listen to this podcast and they're like, nope, how about hear me out? We don't do that.
Right. Yes. Be those people. Be that person who's like, no.
Yeah. No.
No.
I'll still marry you and you can kill us a different way, but not in a balloon.
If you know what could be romantic, instead of challenging each other's existence with a balloon ride, you could just play like William Tell and shoot an arrow at an apple on each other's heads. I mean, if you need to be like on the edge, that's probably even safer than a balloon tour.
Indeed. Indeed. Yeah.
You know, and that way you'll know you really mean it.
Right. That's what you, you really mean it.
Right.
Just really give it to each other.
Don't get in any balloons.
Yep.
And I'll see you next time we record another one of these crazy podcasts.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, everybody.
Okay. Thanks.